Welcome to the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast, a 9-part series devoted to Fabry disease. Throughout this series, we hear from Fabry disease experts, patients, and caregivers who share practical advice, insights, and perspectives on living with this rare disease. Rarely Heard Fabry Disease is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and intended for an international audience outside the USA. Living with Fabry disease or any rare disease can be very challenging, and finding the information you need can be difficult. In the first episode, Dr. Charles Denaro from Australia explains the basics of what Fabry disease is, what causes it, and how it affects individuals. Hi, and welcome, Dr. Denaro, and thank you so much for joining us. Could we please get you to introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, I'm Dr. Charles Denaro, and I work as a general internal medicine specialist and clinical pharmacologist at the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital in Brisbane, Australia. In addition, I'm an associate professor of medicine with the University of Queensland. In the past, I have been on the Australian Commonwealth Health Department's Fabry Advisory Committee, and currently I'm a member of the Medical Advisory Committee for the patient organisation in Australia, namely Fabry Australia. I have been involved in creating guidelines for the treatment of Fabry disease and involved in a few scientific studies in looking into Fabry disease. And I was involved recently in a large screening study looking for Fabry disease in 3,000 patients in Queensland with kidney disease.
That's great. And thank you for sharing your experience, Dr. Denaro. As you know, this podcast is all about Fabry disease. Shall we start our conversation with the basics? Could you tell us what Fabry disease is?
Andersen Fabry disease, or Fabry disease for short, is a genetic disorder or disease and comes in the category of lysosomal storage diseases. There are over 50 different lysosomal storage diseases, and Fabry disease is one of the most common ones. Now, in each cell, there is a compartment called a lysosome, and its main job is to break down molecules or compounds that the cell no longer needs. To some extent, it's like a garbage disposal unit. There are multiple lysosomes in every cell, and to break down the different molecules and compounds, the lysosome has proteins which are called enzymes. Now, DNA, the code in each cell that tells the cell what to do, contains special areas called genes. And these genes code for proteins and enzymes. The genes tell the cell how to make the specific enzyme the cell needs. There is a gene called GLA, and that codes for an enzyme called alpha-galactosidase A. Alpha-galactosidase A lives in the lysosome and breaks down a set of compounds formed when fat or lipid combines with a sugar. These compounds have a very fancy name, and it's called glycosphingolipids. The most common of these glycosphingolipids in Fabry disease is called GB3, and it is a very important compound for the cell. Unfortunately, the DNA code is not always correct. There can be changes or alterations to the code. When changes make a gene faulty, we call that a genetic disease or disorder. And the change or the alteration in the DNA code is called a mutation. Sometimes the mutation does no harm. However, when the mutation makes the gene defective, we call that a pathogenic variant, which means it's disease-producing.
That's interesting. Yes, so individuals affected by Fabry disease have a change in their genetic code, which causes the disease?
Yes, so when there is a bad alteration or mutation to the GLA gene or the Fabry gene, the cell can no longer make alpha-galactosidase A, or it only makes a very little of it. As a result, the GB3 cannot be broken down and it gets stuck in the lysosome. So the levels build up in the lysosome and eventually it causes the lysosome to stop working properly. So you can clearly see that suddenly the garbage disposal unit of the cell is blocked. It doesn't work. This is terrible for the cell and eventually the cell dies. Once the lysosome stops working, and once particularly the cell dies and stops working, all its compounds that are inside the cell, including the waste products like GB3, are released into the surrounding tissue. and that stimulates inflammation. And this is the basis of Fabry disease.
Right, Dr. Denaro, would you mind explaining to us what inflammation is?
Now, it does take a little while to understand exactly what is inflammation. Now, you might recall having injured your hand or finger or cut or a bruise. In this case, you have damaged and killed some cells. You would see that the area becomes swollen, hot, red, painful, and eventually, if it's a cut, for instance, the cut is healed with a scar. So this is the inflammatory response of the body. It's a healing response, a healing mechanism for the body. But in Fabry disease, it is happening inside the body where it shouldn't happen, inside organs, and unfortunately, it can eventually cause organ failure. In the organs, there are no pain fibers, so this inflammation or this inflammatory process can be very silent. And eventually, as I said, the end result of a lot of inflammation is scarring. The official word, the medical word, is fibrosis. So once you have that scarring, the damage to the organ is irreversible. And this damage can occur in a person with this faulty Fabry gene without knowing anything that's happening until it's far too late. To make things more confusing or difficult, there are over 1,000 different ways that the Fabry gene, the GLA gene, can be altered or mutated. And so this can lead to a large variety. It can lead to severe deficiency of the enzyme alpha-galactosidase, so a severe form of Fabry disease, and this is often called classical disease. The mutation can also lead to a milder form of Fabry disease where there is some alpha-galactosidase being produced, but not enough for the cell to work perfectly. And this is called non-classical disease, sometimes late onset disease, or you might hear it as late onset variant. Once there is an alteration or mutation in the Fabry gene, it can then be passed down to future generations, future children, future grandchildren, and we can have very large families where many of the family members can have Fabry disease.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Denaro, for that clear explanation about what Fabry disease is and how it gets passed down through generations. Now, you said that Fabry disease is one of the more common lysosomal storage diseases. Well, to put that into context for our audience, could you perhaps tell us how many people are living with this disease?
This is a very difficult question to answer. Fabry disease is found in all populations and all races in the world. In the past, it was thought to be 1 in 40,000 people with a range between 18,000 to 117,000 individuals. Unfortunately, I know this last number is a study from Australia, and that just looked at the number of patients found in pathology labs in Australia over 10 years or so. And we now know that there are many patients and families are never found, and so this is a significant underestimation. Also, these numbers were gathered in the past when really we were only looking for classical disease and not the milder, non-classical or late onset disease, and often not looking at women patients as well.
I see. Are there any differences, do you think, in how men and women are affected by Fabry disease?
Yes, there are. Fabry gene, called GLA, is found on the X chromosome. Now, chromosomes are large areas or conglomerates of DNA held together, and there are 46 chromosomes in every human cell. 23 chromosomes from mum and 23 chromosomes from dad. Now, you need an X chromosome from mum and an X chromosome from dad to make a female child. And you need an X chromosome from mum and a Y chromosome from dad to make a male child. So females have two X chromosomes, and males only have one X chromosome and, of course, one Y chromosome. Now, since the faulty Fabry gene is on the X chromosome, females will inherit one faulty Fabry gene and one good Fabry gene. Clearly, males who only have one X chromosome, well, they get all the disease because they have only one Fabry gene and it's faulty. Now, to understand how females can get Fabry disease, in each cell, one of the X chromosome is always put to sleep before birth. And what we call this inactivation. Therefore, females are a mosaic. They have a population of cells that express either mum's or dad's X chromosome. And not all females have equal proportions of cells with mum's or dad's X chromosomes inactivated. So let's look at an inactivation ratio of 50-50 as an example. That means 50% of the good X chromosomes are inactivated and 50% of the X chromosomes containing the faulty Fabry gene are inactivated. So you only have 50% of your X chromosomes producing that key enzyme alpha-galactosidase A. Now, in some females, however, most of the good X chromosomes are inactivated or put to sleep. So as a result, these females with the faulty gene get Fabry disease. They accumulate the excess sugar fatty molecule, the glycosphingolipid, one of the most important ones, as we recall, was GB3, but usually at a slower rate because they have a little bit of alpha-galactosidase that is working. So in general, females do get the disease. They suffer a milder form of disease, and they usually get it later on in life compared to males. However, again, some females can get very severe disease, as bad as classical disease in males. And perhaps that's because all the good Fabry genes in that person are put to sleep. It is impossible to predict at this stage which female patient will get the disease and which one will get into trouble really early in life.
Ah, right. I see. So if one of the parents has Fabry disease, how does this affect a child's chances of inheriting the mutated Fabry disease gene?
Okay, first, we look at if dad had the faulty Fabry gene on his X chromosome. That is, he has Fabry disease. Now, since dad has only one X chromosome to give to his children, and you need an X chromosome from mum and dad to make a female child, then all daughters of dad will get the faulty gene. They will all get dad's X chromosome. Now, to make a boy, dad only gives the Y chromosome. The X chromosome comes from mum. So none of dad's sons will get the faulty Fabry gene. Now, let's look at the alternative. If mum has the faulty Fabry gene on one of her X chromosomes, then she has a 50% chance of giving that faulty X chromosome, that faulty gene, to either a son or a daughter. Now, this is based on probability, so on an overall average, but it varies from one family to the other. I have seen mothers who have not given any of the faulty genes to their children, and I have seen mothers who have given the Fabry gene to some of their children, and I have mothers who have given the faulty Fabry gene to all of their children.
Dr. Denaro, earlier you mentioned two types of Fabry disease, classical disease and also the non-classical or late-onset disease. Can you perhaps tell us more about how these different types of Fabry disease manifest in patients?
If you have an alteration or mutation of the Fabry gene that is severe and you cannot produce any active or very little alpha-galactosidase A, then in males, this will be classical disease or the severe form of Fabry disease. Symptoms occur early in childhood, and patients often start showing signs of organ disease in their late teens or early adulthood. On average, without treatment, males will develop signs of organ damage and organ failure in their 40s and 50s. Female patients with the severe or classical mutations of the Fabry gene usually have, as I explained before, a milder course because they've got two X chromosomes, one good, one faulty. So they are accumulating this excess sugar fatty molecule, let's use the word GB3, slower than males. So on average, they tend to manifest the symptoms about 10 years later or so than the males. And the disease course is usually milder. But as I said previously, some females can turn off all their good Fabry genes completely and can have terrible debilitating symptoms early on. Now, if you have an alteration of the Fabry gene that's less severe and you can make some alpha-galactosidase, but not enough for the cell to work perfectly, then you accumulate this excess GB3 at a slower rate and you have fewer symptoms compared to the classical patient. And so in these patients tend to develop organ disease or organ damage later in life, usually in their 50s, but again, it's highly variable. And this is called non-classical or late-onset Fabry disease.
Right, I see. Can you tell us more about the symptoms themselves? What are they and how do they develop?
Fabry symptoms can mimic many common diseases, so it is hard to diagnose. But let's look at classical disease. Symptoms can start in childhood before the age of 10. The nerves in the hands and feet get damaged from this excess sugar fatty molecule, and the damage to those nerves causes pain. The nerves are particularly irritable if they're heated in hot climates, hot weather, with exercise, or when the child has a fever. And often, unfortunately, the pains are discounted and often called growing pains, for instance. In adulthood, some of the patients find that the pain goes away or settles down a lot because the nerves that once sensed pain and temperature in the skin of the hands and feet have actually died. There are biopsies showing that the nerve fibers in the skin have gone away. However, for others, and I think we don't really understand it, but there are brain mechanisms, the pain can continue on all of their life. This is variable. Okay. In addition, the classic patients can lose the ability to sweat, making exercise even more difficult. So they get pain when they exercise. And in addition to that, they can't sweat very well, so they get overheated and they can even get heat stroke. So at school, the children often avoid sports, and because of that, they can be ostracized or bullied. In addition, they can suffer terrible pain crises, acute pain crises, pain that can go on for a couple of days. They miss school and are in bed for days. In classical disease, we also see children and teenagers suffer from stomach pains and diarrhea. This is because the nerves to the bowel, small bowel, large bowel, and the stomach are affected by Fabry disease. This usually occurs with meals, so they get pain just after meals and diarrhea after meals, and can occur in some of our patients every day and multiple times in the day. And this often mimics a common condition called irritable bowel syndrome, so it is often attributed to this common condition rather than someone thinking about Fabry disease. Now, you can see that if you've got pain when you exercise or overheated and you've got diarrhea and pain every time you eat, these children can miss school or have problems at school because of these symptoms. And so eventually they may want to avoid going to school, particularly if they're ostracized or bullied by their classmates and are thought to be lazy by their teachers. It can be terrible for them while growing up, not knowing what the cause is. And parents may not understand what's happening to their child and may think the child is lazy, malingering, and needs to be forced to go back to school and suffer further problems. As we get older into teenage life, the classic patients can develop a red spotty rash. It's over their chest and abdomen, arms and legs, but particularly in the groin areas and on the genitals. This rash is called angiokeratoma and can come and go. It's, again, often mistaken for other diseases. And this rash was the way that Anderson, a British dermatologist, and Fabry, a German dermatologist, discovered the disease in 1898. There can be changes to the cornea. That's the clear part of the eye. And a particular whorling pattern called corneal verticillata can be seen. It can only be seen on a slit lamp examination by an optometrist or an eye doctor. It does not affect vision, but many patients can be diagnosed that way. Fatigue and tiredness are very common symptoms that the patient complains of. Now, as we get into adult life, hearing and inner ear mechanisms are affected. This is, again, usually in classical disease. So you can get ringing in the ears. This is called tinnitus. You can get vertigo or dizzy spells because the balance mechanisms of the inner ear are affected, and you can have progressive hearing loss. Sometimes there can be sudden, even total hearing loss on one side. In some patients, their lymphatic channels, which is a system that brings fluid from the legs and arms back to the heart, can get blocked, and that can cause permanent leg swelling.
Ah, I see. Does Fabry disease affect any specific organs in the body?
Yes. In Fabry disease, there are three main organs that are most affected in adulthood. These are the kidneys, the heart, and the brain. Now, the kidneys filter blood, and so initially the filter itself can be damaged. And then with ongoing inflammation, the kidney fibrosis or scars up and starts to fail. Eventually, kidney failure occurs, requiring dialysis. The heart is affected in two ways. The heart muscle, with this inflammation, increases in size, and then there's also scarring. So the heart walls get thick, and they do not relax very well, causing impaired circulation and shortness of breath with exercise. You have to remember that the heart is a pump. So it can pump initially pretty well, but then it has to relax to get the next lot of blood in. And that's where, when the heart walls are thick, it's difficult for the blood to go back into the heart. As the scarring continues, the walls of the heart, of course, stop working properly, and the patient develops heart failure. Now, the scarring can also affect the electrical system in the heart. The electrical system is essential to make the muscle of the heart pump regularly and make it pump in the right sequence. So if the electrical system in the heart is scarred and damaged, then the pumping can fail. So patients might have early signs of this. They may complain of palpitations, dizzy spells, blackouts. The blood vessels to the heart can block up, causing chest pain, which we call angina, and even heart attacks. The third organ is the brain, and you can suffer strokes. So strokes occur when a blood vessel to the part of the brain becomes blocked, and that part of the brain that relies on that blood vessel can die. Also, we can see white matter changes. Now, white matter in the brain is the wires that connects nerve cells in the brain. Like all electrical wires, they have insulation around them, and white matter changes means that the insulation is damaged. We think this is due to the blockage of very tiny, small blood vessels. And if extensive, it can affect memory, and some patients can have trouble with complex decision-making. But dementia does not occur as far as we know. Now, when we go to non-classical or late-onset disease, patients often do not have many of these symptoms that I've just gone over. And they may only have symptoms associated with damage to these three key organs. Sometimes they have no symptoms at all. Even though they have no symptoms at all, yet in the background, damage to these three key organs may be ongoing.
Right. And what diagnostic tests would you choose to perform if you saw a patient with these symptoms and suspected they had Fabry disease?
The easiest test to order is a simple blood test to measure the level of the affected enzyme alpha-galactosidase A. If it is low in males, that usually means he has Fabry disease. As I said before, there can be exceptions where there has been a change in the Fabry gene and the level of the alpha-galactosidase A is low, yet the person does not get the disease. In these cases, the level is only just below the normal range. Clearly, in classical disease, the males, the enzyme is either can't be detected or really, really low. In female patients, measuring alpha-galactosidase is tricky, because females, of course, have one good X chromosome and one faulty X chromosome. And the level of the alpha-galactosidase A can be normal in 30 to 50% of females, and yet they can still get Fabry disease. So if it is low, they will likely have Fabry disease. But however, if it is normal, you still cannot rule out Fabry disease. Now, the best test to work out whether a patient has Fabry disease is to look at the total DNA code in the Fabry gene. This is called GLA gene sequencing. Since there are over 1,000 ways a gene can be altered or mutated, this can be a complex test and usually very expensive. However, technology is improving all the time and costs are coming down. If, however, you have a family member with Fabry disease and you know the exact alteration or the mutation in the family, then this is much simpler and a cheaper test, as the laboratory is only looking after one change in the DNA code of the Fabry gene. In addition, we can also measure the GB3 in the blood or urine. In blood, however, the levels can only be slightly higher than normal and therefore difficult to interpret. This is because GB3 itself is broken down by another enzyme to another fat sugar molecule called lyso-GB3. And this one is easily measured in blood. So if the lyso-GB3 is elevated, then most likely the patient has Fabry disease. It's a good test to use when the alpha-galactosidase A is normal in female patients, or when the lab finds a new change in the DNA code and they're not sure what it means. You can measure the lyso-GB3, and if it's elevated, then it's likely that this change in the DNA will cause Fabry disease.
Thank you, Dr. De Niro. I know it can take a long time for patients to reach a diagnosis. Now, could you share why are rare diseases so challenging to diagnose?
Okay, well, there's so many non-specific symptoms which can mimic common conditions. It is very difficult for doctors to identify Fabry disease. There are many cases in the literature where it can take many years or even decades before the disease is identified if there is no family history of Fabry disease. Your family may have experienced this long delay in finding the right diagnosis. There are lots of different takes on this, but one take is that it's been estimated that it takes 10 specialists and 10 years on average before a diagnosis is made in a patient without any family history. You have to realize that there are over 7,000 rare diseases, and no medical practitioner can know and understand 7,000 rare diseases, as well as a few hundred more common diseases. Patients with non-classical or late-onset disease may have very few symptoms, and their organ problems are often confused with more common conditions and therefore easily missed. Screening programs in patients who have Fabry disease, heart problems, or strokes do find new cases of Fabry disease, and then the whole family can be screened.
I see. And why is it critical that Fabry disease patients are identified as soon as possible?
Well, there's a very simple answer. Once you have scarring or fibrosis, it is irreversible. The organ is permanently damaged, and no matter what modern medicine can do, you can't reverse that. And of course, once you have organ failure, that's it. The organ does not work and cannot be retrieved. The organ has to be replaced. Now, for kidney failure, patients go on dialysis, but let me tell you, dialysis is no panacea. It only gives a little back of what a normal kidney can do and is accompanied with a host of complications, but clearly much better than nothing. Replacing the heart, as you can imagine, is not straightforward, and brain damage is also permanent. Now, there are specific therapies available for Fabry disease, and so you've got to avoid these late complications, this scarring, this organ failure, and the only way to do that is to start clearing this sugar fatty molecule, these glycosphingolipids, this GB3, as early as possible before there's too much of it around. Lastly, with treatment, symptoms and quality of life no doubt are improved. Pain, fatigue, stomach pains, diarrhea are improved. In some cases, patients tell me that their sweating returns and their exercise tolerance improves. Children can avoid the pain and the terrible stomach problems and spend more time at school. So if Fabry disease is diagnosed in your family, it's important to screen all the family members for the disease.
Absolutely, yes. I see. Screening helps to identify patients so that treatment can be started as soon as possible. Could you perhaps share some examples from your clinical experience of patients' complicated diagnostic journeys?
Okay. I've seen many patients where the diagnosis has taken a long time to get it right. I recall one patient under my care had a large stroke at the age of 19, which left him with uncontrolled epilepsy and some difficulty in walking. He then developed a red spotty rash and kidney disease. This combination can mimic an autoimmune condition, and that is when the immune system is attacking various organs, like the condition lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. The doctors treating him did a special x-ray test, which unfortunately was misinterpreted, and it was thought that the x-ray test confirmed that this was a particular type of autoimmune disease. So the patient was put on strong medicines to turn off the immune system. And of course, these medicines are quite dangerous because if you turn off your immune system, then you're at risk of infection. However, after a couple of years, it was clear that the treatment was not working and the patient was getting worse. So the patient actually was referred to my hospital, where the kidney doctor looking after the patient had a brainwave and ordered a test for alpha-galactosidase A level, which turned out to be undetectable, and the patient was referred to me for treatment. Unfortunately, the kidneys were damaged too much by then, and the patient had to go on dialysis, but luckily then had a kidney transplant. His epilepsy remains difficult to control. Another patient that's under my care developed high blood pressure and kidney disease in his 20s and had a kidney biopsy to look for the cause. And under the microscope, the pathologist thought the problem was something else, a condition that was much commoner than Fabry disease. Eventually, his kidneys failed and he needed dialysis in his late 30s and then had a kidney transplant. But then he developed a heart rhythm problem called atrial fibrillation. This is a very irregular heartbeat. And with that, he had a stroke, which caused balance problems and vertigo. In addition, he was always complaining of ringing in the ears and hearing problems. Now, the treatment when you have this atrial fibrillation is a blood thinning medication. And despite being on this medication, he had yet another stroke. It wasn't severe, but he's definitely had another stroke and had to spend some time in rehabilitation. Now, the rehabilitation doctor noted all the problems that the patient had and also that his heart walls were very thick. And he too had a brainwave and ordered an alpha-galactosidase A test. And the level was very low and he referred the patient to me. The patient recalled when I asked him specific questions that as a young child or teenager, he had all the classic symptoms which unfortunately were ignored by his parents and the family doctors. The last patient I'd like to talk about is a man who developed heart palpitations at the age of 37. And on testing, it was shown that he's had very thick walls in his heart, but no other symptoms. And it was thought he had a condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Cardiomyopathy means disease of the heart muscle. And now, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is another genetic disease, but much, much more common than Fabry disease. Anyway, over the years, things slowly worsened. And by the late 50s and early 60s, he developed terrible heart failure. The heart wasn't pumping properly and had to go into hospital regularly to be treated. He had terrible quality of life, shortness of breath with any exertion, a lot of fatigue. Eventually, because he was in his early 60s, he's referred to our heart transplant service in Queensland, which in the past had found a patient with Fabry disease and had decided to do routine testing for Fabry disease for every patient that came to them with thick heart walls. So they tested this man when they came to their service and the alpha-galactosidase A level was below the normal range. So his heart was severe and he needed a heart transplant. And so he did have a successful heart transplant. And when the original heart was taken out, they sent it to the laboratory and the pathologist looked at it under the microscope and confirmed that this was all due to Fabry disease and not due to hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So the patient was referred to me for treatment. This is, of course, non-classical or late-onset disease.
Now, thank you so much, Dr. Dinero, for sharing your experiences with us. We've really learned a lot in this episode. Now, before we wrap up, can you please give us a quick summary of what we talked about today?
Well, in summary, Fabry disease is a rare genetic disease which is found in families. Fathers will pass on the disease to all his daughters, and mothers on average to half of their children. The disease starts from birth and slowly causes cell death and organ failure in adult life. It is life-threatening and can cause terrible quality of life. There are specific therapies are available as well as general treatments to improve quality of life and prevent organ complications, but it needs to be started before irreversible changes, scarring occurs in the organs. Family screening is vital to find patients who are in the early stages of the disease and may not know that they have anything wrong with them, because treatment can prevent a lot of these complications that I've just talked about.
That's it for this episode of the Rarely Heard Fabry Disease Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the discussion with Dr. Dinero. Support the podcast by subscribing, sharing it with others, or leaving a rating. In the next episode, Dr. Dinero will be joined by Dr. Charles Lorenzo from Brazil, and they will discuss the treatment options available to patients to manage Fabry disease. This podcast series is initiated and funded by Takeda Pharmaceuticals and is intended for an international audience outside the USA.